welcome to the Logistics Tribe. I'm your host, Boris Felgender, and my guest today is Roman Zack. Roman is one of the founders of AimTech. AimTech helps companies on their digital transformation journeys. They combine a very deep consulting expertise in manufacturing and logistics with a unique approach to implementing software solutions. And what's fascinating about AimTech is that they have been around since 1996, a time when digital transformation wasn't even a thing yet. And today, the company is very highly regarded, particularly in the automotive sector. They're based in Pilsen in the Czech Republic, but they're operating globally. Roman and I talked about the various issues and challenges that his customers in the automotive sector are facing these days, and how digital strategies and tools can help them. Quite an interesting discussion that you don't want to miss. Let's go. Hello, Roman. Welcome to the Logistics Tribe. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for welcoming me. I'm really proud to be here.
Yeah, me too. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation. You are the founder and co-founder of AimTech. And AimTech, I just realized, has been around for more than a quarter of a century, which is not typical, you know, if you consider how many technology companies come and go, how many startups try to make it and never actually do. You've been around the block a few times. The company was founded in 1996 at a time where the term digital transformation or digitization wasn't really a term, right? But this was a time when we barely started using, you know, email and the internet. 1996, it's quite early. Take me back a couple of moments to, you know, the year 1996 when you and your buddy started thinking about founding your own company and what AimTech has turned into since.
It's quite interesting story because we, with my friend and co-owner Jaroslav Orprecht, so we have been working together for several companies, and the last one was Deloitte in Prague, and we were implementing the ERP systems, and Jaroslav was involved in sales, me in delivery, and we just found that we are not happy, and we would like to start our own business, so we established the company, which was very people-focused, so that's one of our key value that we take care about the people, and because we deliver services and solutions to the customers, so we established AimTech at the time, and it was primarily ERP implementator.
Yeah, and those were the heydays of ERP, right? The ERP systems where this was sort of this central piece, and we get up to all of that, how that's evolved over time. But so you were early on. I mean, 1996, and also just, it's not obvious, but I probably will mention it in the intro that I'll record after our conversation, is that you're based in the Czech Republic, right? And it's taking back 1996. Now, how common was it there to start a technology startup in the Czech Republic? Were you breaking ground? Was it back in the days already a thriving technology ecosystem, startup ecosystem? What was it like back in the days in 96?
Actually, the ERP system was Bipix, and American company. And the reason why we also started the company is that the customers started to ask us for, especially automotive customers, asking us for, that time it was called barcoding. So this means warehouse management systems, the real handling unit management and so on. And also they asked us to do EDI with the customers and suppliers. So we started to add another additional solutions to the ERP package. And the time it was not so easy to find. So we started with originally with ready-made products, but we were also not happy with them. So we slowly switched from pure consultancy company also to be a software house. So we currently also develop our software solutions for our customers.
Mm-hmm. And your main focus now and always has been, if I remember correctly, is automotive, right? Or was there a time when you switched gears or switched focus?
It was, we switched to automotive in the year 2000 because what was forming us a lot was world crisis. So first crisis, which was Y2K, year 2000.
So Y2K, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So we thought that we will get a lot of new business with Y2K because changing all the systems to be ready for it. Nevertheless, all the customers were so afraid from it, so they stopped all the IT projects in year 2000. And it was, we almost bankrupt at that time. But the decision was also to focus on one vertical, and this was automotive, which was quite clever decision from today's point of view.
Yeah, and also, I mean, we have a quite a global audience, and just to put things in perspective, from people or listeners that don't fully appreciate or understand the role that the Czech Republic plays in the automotive sector, please spend some time how that's developed, right? Because back in the days, it was, for example, mostly German production, Germany production. All the OEMs and all the suppliers were mostly in Germany. But you happened to start at a time where there was a lot of shift going into Eastern Europe as production facilities and a lot of suppliers and so forth set up shop in Eastern European countries. Take us back to the time where maybe that played into your cards, right? Because things were really starting to happen in that part of the world.
That's right, because many or the new OEMs which came to the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Eastern Europe, like Volkswagen with the acquiring Skoda, or Volkswagen in Bratislava, but also Toyota with Toyota Peugeot Citroën in Kolín, Hyundai Kia, PSA in Slovakia, and so on. They pushed a lot of Tier 1, Tier 2 suppliers to build new factories or new manufacturing facilities in Czech, Slovakia. By the way, these were our first pile of customers. Yeah, so a lot of investments was done here. The plants were very modern, and this combination of I think really good Czech management of the companies. So these plants here in Czech, Slovakia, Hungary, they are one of the best plants and globally. Yeah, so.
Yeah,
it is a big opportunity. It was a big opportunity for us, and today, for example, we still start a lot of pilot projects here in Eastern Europe, which are the pilots for the whole globe. So we do the pilot project and then we roll it out to US, Mexico, China, and so on, together with our customers.
Yeah, that would have been my next question. And maybe jumping ahead a little bit, but I would assume that move to China, since we're talking about Volkswagen, for example, Volkswagen's largest market is China. There's a lot of manufacturing going on. A lot of new manufacturing has started to happen there in the last 15 years or so. Do you feel like the center of gravity, as you described it, where Eastern Europe used to be a very big center of gravity for manufacturing for Europe and also globally, but has that shifted to China? Have you lost some ground, or how would you describe the sort of regional focus of where stuff is actually being made?
I think from our point of view, it remained the same, because still manufacturing for European customers was done in Europe primarily. Nevertheless, it was opportunity for us, because after building the plants in Eastern Europe, so most of the OEMs and also Tier 1, Tier 2 suppliers moved the production to Mexico and China. So it was an opportunity for us to follow our customers to these markets and regions. On the other hand, of course, the consumer power in China is so big, so it makes a lot of movements towards China. On the other hand, today, with all the disruptions, so there are the trends again to get a lot of production back to Europe.
Yeah, and fast forward to today, like in a nutshell, how would you describe what Aimtech does today? If you meet someone for the first time and you explain to someone what your main focus is, what's your elevator pitch of what you guys do in 2023?
So we are digitalizing production and logistics, as primarily at automotive companies. And our typical customer, we do it from Pilsen, we do it globally for global customers. And our typical customers is, for example, interior producer who is producing, for example, door panels or cockpits or headliners. And we start from assembly in sequence, following weeks, steering the production and assembly with all the logistics around. This means production feeding, warehouse management, traceability, communication with suppliers, customers, and so on. So what typical Tier 1, Tier 2 suppliers in automotive needs to fulfill manufacturing and logistics processes for the customers.
Yeah, and you do that with how many people around the world? A couple hundred, 200, 300 people? How many people are you as of today?
Today is approximately 250 people.
250, okay.
And still our primary market is Europe. Nevertheless, as I thought, we support the customers also in US, in China, South Africa, and so on.
Does that mean you have local offices around the world, or do you most of the stuff out of your headquarters office in Pilsen?
We still do it from our headquarters office in Pilsen. The reason is simple. For us, it's so important to share the know-how between our people that we still decided to stay at one location. And on the other hand, today, with just-in sequence and manufacturing processes, they are so critical that even minutes play a role. So we are able to support all the customers worldwide in almost in real time, so in with reaction times in minutes and so on. And we also optimized our implementation methodologies, and we can implement typical site in US or Mexico, for example, within 2 visits. Yeah, so that's we make it very straightforward and very lean, and today is not real limit for us, the location of the customer's location.
Yeah, makes sense. And since you're so much focused on one particular industry, on one particular vertical, you know, you are very closely attached to the hip. So if the automotive industry is doing well, you may be doing well, but if the automotive industry is suffering and going through major change, you have to change alongside. From your perspective, what are the biggest challenges that you see that the industry that you're serving is currently facing? A lot has been said about these major trends, but maybe from your vantage point, with a particular eye on the digital transformation journey of these companies, what are the biggest things that keep your customers up at night?
I see several questions here within what you told now. And the first one is that, of course, it was a hard decision to focus just on automotive, because we also we are really, believe, good in logistics, and we get a lot of inquiries from retail and e-commerce and so on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And nevertheless, we decided, because if you want to be the best, so you need to focus today. Mm-hmm. And also maybe one additional information that we started, we are family business. And yeah. We started also because of sustainability of our business for next generations of our families. So we started a new professional supervisory board, and we had really tough discussions with the board about if we should focus on just one vertical, because it seems really risky. Nevertheless, we persuaded even the board, and we really make an agreement internally that this is the right way, because we want to get the bigger stake in automotive simply, and we want to focus, and that's when you want to be successful, you sometimes have to take a risk. Yeah. So that was the decision, and we focus primarily on the automotive industry. So that was
Quick question there before we move on to more of the challenges of the automotive industry. What just triggered my mind or got me thinking was the fact that you are very much selling to German Mittelstand companies, for example. These are one of your major clients, which are all, or most of them, many of them are family businesses and Mittelstand. So what you're saying, your company is a family business. Do you see some analogies? Did that make life for you easier or harder? I mean, is there some connection to the customers that you're selling to? Is there something where your philosophy and the way you think long term is aligned with the way these folks think? Or am I thinking too much into it?
I think I believe it's helping us a lot, especially during last couple of years. Because we were also presenting the FADA strategy and FADA the business sustainability to heads of our customers. So I had, to, for example, during 2022, and I had quite a lot of meetings with CEOs of our customers. Mm-hmm. And they were really lucky and impressed that we built the sustainability of the family business, and that we investing into the activities like board and the holding structures and so on, because the customers are really depending on us. They are relying on us. Our applications are really business critical. So there are some fears at the customers that maybe we can sell the business, or that somebody can acquire us and there will be no continuity and so on. Mm. So for mm-hmm. them, that we build the continuity, that we want to keep the company as it is today, with the very strong company culture and values and so on, what the customer feels. So they are really lucky about it, about this movement and about this direction that we set up during last years. So that's supporting the business definitely perfectly.
Yeah, which is, you know, I think that's underestimated, this fact, because a lot of technology startups, a lot of companies that want to sell you technology solutions, innovative new technology solutions, are venture capital finance. They're in it for a quick growth, quick, you know, customer acquisition and then moving on to the next thing, going public or getting sold by somebody, which is a different mindset than what I referred to earlier as the German Mittelstand thinking, which is a long-term legacy building, long in it for the long run. And if I understand it properly, you are bootstrapped, right? You're not relying on venture capital. There's nobody that's expecting a quick return and a 10x in a couple of years, but you are in it for the long run. And I think that would be appreciated by your customers. I think that's undervalued. And that's just another way of describing what you just said, right?
Yeah. I think it started like this, that we get a lot of requests from different M&A companies and also even players on the market that they would like to acquire us. Yeah. So we start thinking about it. It started like 5 years ago. And we also talk to these companies, to M&A companies. And then we found that what we do, that we like it, that we have a freedom, what we can decide, and we can do investment which will maybe return in 5 years, so we can make very long-term investment into the internal system about digitization of our own deliveries. We don't have to look at the immediate profit. Of course, we need it to generate the cash, which is important for the business.
Sure.
On the other hand, we can afford long-term investments, and that's something we like. We also see that we are really important for our employees, so the people like the company. They are very loyal, and they liked how the company is running. And we also found that we are very useful for the Pilsen region. We cooperate with universities. We are funding different like Alzheimer's fund and so on. So that's okay, that's something which is really beneficial. And we decided that we want to keep it as it is. Yeah. So that was the decision we make within last 3 years. And we are working on it today. And this helped us also finally to be competitive, because I think we in some things differ from usual IT companies or usual consultancy companies.
Yeah, I also find that very attractive, and I find it very important that technology companies are not all congregated and situated in one place, like Silicon Valley, for example, right? Or Berlin or let's say London, but there's a wider base with companies in different regions, with different backgrounds, different access to their local ecosystem and so forth. And so far, I hadn't thought of Pilsen as a center of gravity for tech. But describe to me just a little bit before we go back to the trends in automotive and the way you solve some of your customers' issues. But I'd like to understand a little bit more Pilsen. I've never been to Pilsen, and I will go to Pilsen sometime this spring because you have an interesting conference coming up that I'll definitely be part of. But describe to me, for example, why did you decide to stick around there? I mean, you could have said, well, you know, it's a lot easier for us to get access to good talent if we have a satellite office in Silicon Valley, or look at all these people that are in Berlin, what have you, or Munich, you name it, right? the possibilities would have been endless, but you made a conscious decision that Pilsen is your center of gravity and your home base.
Well, it's primarily we have our business about the people. Mm-hmm. And we have a really good university in Pilsen and also the high schools. So we cooperate with them. So we have access to really good people. You know, it's critical today. And mm-hmm. we built a really very good employer brand here. So it's not easy, but we can still get a new people on board, which is really important. The mm-hmm. other factor is that we have as we mentioned in the beginning, we have the automotive facilities here. So which be the pilots. And we are near to Germany, so we have like 40 minutes drive and we are direction to Nuremberg, and that's it. And of course, we have also really good beer here.
Yes, you do, for sure. And I'll try some of that, I promise. Okay, let's go back to some of the challenges, and maybe you could summarize what the main issues are for the automotive sector that they're struggling with, where you come in to help them on their journey.
I think this is a really tough time for the automotive suppliers today, because a lot of this poly crisis we have today, which are coming from, they have political background, they have technological background, like electromobility and so on. There is also significant switches in population, so it's not easy to get employees, new employees and so on. So it's really tough and very hard market today for these suppliers. On the other hand, they have the typical mid-sized companies. They have just a few people in IT and for digitalization. So they have like 10 or 15, 20 people in the corporate IT team. Mm-hmm. So they have to be very focused. And we help these customers to really find the right way how to digitize the business. That's really crucial. And it's not only about the technologies, it's about how to build the internal teams, how to build the digital competence, how to implement agile approaches to decision making, because you can do a lot of things in digitalization, but you have to focus, you have to be very flexible.
Right.
And what we are helping to the customers is to be more flexible, to be globally, to be more, on the other hand, more standardized, which means managing the costs, and to be, what I mentioned, to be agile and flexible. Yeah? So to be able to react very flexible to the changes. And the final benefit is that the customers are becoming then more resilient. Yeah? So that means more resilience towards all these crises. And they will stay competitive and they'll be able to stay on the market and to even get more from the market.
Yeah, you're checking a lot of boxes there. What is your typical approach? You mentioned earlier, and it's worth pointing it out again, that you're not just a consulting company, but you also have software, but you're neither a software company, not a consulting company. You're somewhat a hybrid in between, right? And why is that important?
Why we are a software company? This is, again, historical, because we were looking for some really good, for example, warehouse management system in 22 years ago. And it was, for example, the beginning when SAP was introducing hand unit management. And we were fighting with the accuracy of the inventory, for example, at typical automotive suppliers, because this is repetitive. So you move many, many of similar boxes, these blue KLT boxes or whatever. We were looking for this. And then we decided to starting developing our own software solution. And that's something which is giving us advantage that, and why we are mixed, because we are near to the customer. We believe we understand the real customer needs, and we have the software development very near to this, to the customer. Yeah? So we can prepare the solutions which are really so flexible and so reliable and so deployable at the corporate customers that we can bring the ability to the customer that they are competitive finally. Yeah. So our software is, I'll call it category MOM, manufacturing operation management, which is mix what I already mentioned in the beginning. So it's mix of just-in-sequence, it's mix with MES, with WMS and warehouse control systems. And all these today fully integrated to all the surrounding world. This means to ERPs like SAP or QAD and other packages on one side, and on the other side, fully integrated with all the technologies you have on the shop floor or in the warehouses. So this means connection to the assembly lines, to molding machines, all this stuff, and also connection to fully automated warehouses like SRS, vertical storages, AMRs, conveyors, and all these technologies. And we take care about balancing and fluent flow of all the inventory across these different technologies. So that's our main goal and what we help the customers to do. And of course, your question was how we start this or how we, what we do with the customer. So we really usually look for the pilot project with them. And usually the best door opener, honestly, is production planning. Yeah, so advanced production planning and scheduling, which is actually some cherry on the cake, because to do the real good advanced planning and scheduling, you need a lot of data, reliable data. And that's starting from the master data. You need to have really high quality of bill of materials, routings, and so on your system, and you need to have high quality of operational data. So to have the status of inventory, open orders, work in process, information about available resources, and so on. So usually when we start discussion about advanced planning and scheduling, we find with the customer that there is needed improvement in, for example, warehouse management or MES to get the proper data. So it initiates the other projects on the shop floor to make the data ready. And after that, we are able to finally implement the advanced planning and scheduling, because really this is something I believe that like 10% of all the companies are really able to do today, to do the real production planning focused on real constraints, which is real solving the queue of the orders on specific workplaces and so on.
Yeah, I would assume that a lot of your customers are SAP customers, and you have a situation where they come in and they just bundle stuff, right? We just have a solution for everything, and they're making the case that, well, you want to stick with SAP modules for everything. How do you compete with that? And what argument do you make that you need to switch out your advanced planning and scheduling module for something from Aimtape, for example? What's the best case for that?
What I forgot to mention is that we have also SAP team on board.
Yes, I saw that too. So that complicates things also.
Yeah, so our biggest strengths are that we have really experienced SAP consultants and developers on board, so we can really seamlessly integrate to SAP. And we also develop our own add-ons directly in SAP environment, so like for warehouse management, production control, and so on. So we develop this also for our customers. And honestly, there are two kinds of customers. Some of the customers are very SAP-centric. They want to have the solution within SAP so that we offer this on SAP side also. So we have these add-ons also on SAP. We utilize our know-how of logistics, production feeding, Kanban, Heijunka, all this stuff. And then we have customers which would like to keep the SAP very basic because of the standardization globally, especially the very big suppliers and like harnesses suppliers or others. And they want to have the specialties outside of SAP in WMS, MES, and so on. And we have customers who have the mix. So they, for example, have a warehouse management from us directly in SAP and MES and traceability outside of SAP because of the flexibility.
I can imagine that becomes complex very, very quickly. Are there upsides to being a customer for your entire suite of products? I mean, is there sort of synergies between using all of your models, or are you clearly offering like a pick and choose, like a menu where I pick this and there's no disadvantage if I don't use the other module, for example? Talk to me about the way your offering is set up, how it fits together, and what the benefits of choosing individual parts are versus going for the entire suite.
I think it's very simple because usually the customer has some specific pain. The customer has a priority, either issue in logistic or with request from OEM for traceability for safety critical part, or I don't know, start a new sequencing project, very complex with assembly to sequence also. So we usually start with this small pilot project. Mm-hmm. And we are highly motivated to make it successful. Yeah. So to make it on time, on budget, and to make the customer happy, because we can grow at the customer in two dimensions. One is the globally, so to do the rollout, not only at one location, but do the rollout to another 15, 20 locations. And second is to do the cross-selling. So this means that to switch from assembly sequence to traceability, to MES, to get the right data, to big BioLite systems, to manage the logistic flow, and so on. Yeah. So usually, at the end, we have a story from one of the US-based company where the corporate IT manager was telling on the really board level, who the hell is Aimtape? because he recognized that we are so present at the different locations with different areas. So that's what way we do. And so that keeps us extremely motivated to bring the ability to digitalization ability successfully to the customer and to make successful project, because then there are no limits for growing at inside one customer.
Yeah, it seems to me like you really do have the finger on the pulse of what the need of your customers are. But how far does it actually extend? I mean, do you actually develop custom-made solutions with your customers? I mean, do you, for example, work together to expand your capabilities, for example, based on your needs? Or is it more the other way around, that you're developing solutions and then trying to sort of place it somewhere in the market? Talk to me about that approach there.
Our approach is very straightforward and simple. We try to productize everything. So we try to develop, and we do our best to develop as standard products as possible. On the other hand, so configurable, or when you imagine Lego, so that you can build from the small boxes or small components a big solution which is really flexible and adjusted to the customer needs. Yeah, and that's something we are, I believe, really good on it, is that we support our customers globally with the standardization. So we try to support to make as many processes as possible standard, so you can do the rollout globally. On the other hand, we want to support the customer with maximum flexibility, because on each location globally, you have some specifics which are giving competitive advantage to this location, and you need to support it. Yeah, so that's, I think, fight of every corporate IT manager or corporate production manager, logistic manager, SAP manager, is the conflict between standardization and flexibility. And I believe we have a solution for it. And it's not only about how the software is designed, but it's about how we digitize our own delivery, how we prepare the templates. We have, for example, developed our own application based on Microsoft CRM, where we have so-called process breakdown structures, so we can break down the delivery to hundreds of delivered processes, and we can monitor the status of each process, if it was defined, set up, tested, that it was done integration test, we can assign the remarks to this process and so on. So we can really properly control each process, and we can say, okay, now we have 70% of business critical processes ready for going live. So we can do very proper reporting to the customer and so on. And when you put all this together with know-how of our people, which I mentioned at the beginning, that we keep very strong company culture, and we have very good atmosphere, and we believe into values. And so that's something that we can retain people for a long time. So we have people who are working with Aimtech for 15 years and more, very senior people. So they have excellent know-how of the branch, excellent know-how of our products, and excellent know-how of the tools we use for the delivery. So when you put all this together, so we can do the projects very efficiently, and we can really significantly ship the customer. And the other thing which is important, which I believe is a differentiator when you compare to other consultancy companies, we try to deliver minimum services. Even we have a big added value at the projects, so we try to make a good ratio between subscription or licenses sold and services. And we motivate the customer to build internal teams and to take over the responsibility for further maintenance and setup of the application. And we support the customer with building the internal competence centers and to do the rollouts by themselves and to do just very advanced new projects with us. And that's our strategy. So to deliver maximum projects with limited resources, because what you mentioned at the beginning, we want to grow just organically. That's for us, the biggest limitation is building our internal capacities to build in new people, to build the know-how, which is extremely critical for the projects. So we can grow like 10 to 50% in the headcount on an annual basis. Yeah. So that's what is limiting us. And when we want to satisfy more customers, we need to do it more efficiently with less mandates. So that's the strategy we have now.
Yeah, which is very refreshing, because there's also this other business model where your entire business model is to keep your customers perpetually dependent on your consultants and to make it work, right? Which is the exact opposite of what you just described, where you as quickly as possible want to make the customer self-sustaining and they could take care of their own business, as opposed to artificially inflating the need to have your consultants perpetually on for the rest of time, so to speak.
I think this is one of the messages we are bringing to the customers, that we believe that the customers are then more competitive, because definitely with your internal teams, you have still bigger flexibility. You have control over your internal people. You can decide what they be working on. When we are on several projects, we still, when there is something extra, something new you need to do now, which is today normal. So it's new standard. So it has to be ready now. So we have to then postpone some other projects and so on. But internal is much more easier. So we support the customers really to build the internal digital competence. And also the strategy towards the customer is to build the internal teams, to persuade the top management that it should be part of the company culture, the digitization, because it's not about IT managers, it's about logistic manager, about HR managers, about production managers, who has to be digitally competent. They have the they need to have the know-how, they need to understand how to use the technologies. And IT is just giving the support to it. Yeah. So that's one of the important things. And second trend is today that is moving to the cloud, but not, of course, just because of recurring revenues, but because this is really crucial again today, that the IT people are not focusing on preparing servers or infrastructure and taking care for security. This could be simply outsourced today. and they can focus to be partners for the business to introduce this new technology. So to find how to prepare proper reporting, the BI reports, or how to use machine learning and so on to make the business more competitive. I think this is the main role of the IT, to be supporting business and to do the translation between IT and business.
Yeah, cloud is an important keyword here because, well, when you were started in 1996, there was no cloud, right? So you naturally would have started with anything that you've developed as a license and install on your own service type of model, and you had to go through the transition to the cloud. Where are you on that journey? Or another question, where are your customers on that journey? I mean, do you still get a specific request for license and install versus cloud? I mean, are people still making a conscious decision against the cloud in 2023?
Yes, it is still...
It was almost a rhetorical question. I knew that you were going to answer this, but I still wanted to put it out there.
Yeah, I think there is still, I would say, some resilience against the cloud, that the customers, especially with the business critical applications, they would like to have it under control and to have it locally on site and so on. On the other hand, we still selling more and more new projects in the cloud today. And mm-hmm. It's simple because there is so much development in the technologies today, and there are the security issues, cybersecurity and so on. And as I mentioned, that typical mid-sized company has like 10, 15, 20 people in the corporate IT team, and they simply cannot manage everything today. It's not possible. So I think you can deliver better response times. You can scale the applications in the cloud. You have much faster deployment. For example, we had an accident at one of our retail customers, by the way, a couple of months ago, and they had a trouble with their servers, and we were able to switch it to our cloud within 2 hours.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they were happy they had a good backup, so we were able to restore it very fast. And that's it. That's giving the flexibility, because especially at corporate customers, when you want to start a new project, for example, so you wait a couple of 3-4 months for getting just the access to the infrastructure. With the cloud, yeah, you can make it like this. You just snap your fingers and you can start immediately. You have deployment of all the processes, all the templates and so on. So we can start the project within days. Yeah. So that's one of the examples where the cloud is much flexible.
Yeah, you seem to be a proponent of cloud-based systems, rightfully so. But you know, if you had to sort of play devil's advocate for a second, are there good cases where you would honestly say, you know what, given these circumstances, I would not have this application or this use case, whatever, run in the cloud, but here's a use case where you're better off doing something license and install on your old servers? Or are we past those times? Are there no good use cases where that makes any sense at all?
I think if there is a really extremely complex environment, I would still be careful to moving it to the cloud just now. Yeah, because 5 years ago, we have most of the installations on-premise with the customers. Mm-hmm. And this decision to move to the cloud, we really redesigned the applications. We work on the containerization using Kubernetes and all these technologies to get bigger flexibility and also scalability and to have the right performance in the cloud environment. And this sort of new things, like when you want to print from the cloud, is different. The very simple things, you imagine it's hundreds of different topics there. So you have to resolve. And the deployment is something you have to do very carefully. I told that we are in business critical applications. And today, the medium complexity projects we can very simply implement in cloud. The projects which have very huge complexity is still possible, but we have to take care about all the risk management and so on, and to be very careful with testing, proper testing and so on before going live. Yeah. So sometimes when you have a lot of technology attached, like many machines, many technologies, IoT things and so on, so then you have to be careful. But I think it's a question of single years to say that everything will be in the cloud. Yeah. So I am very optimistic with cloud.
Yeah, I'm too. But I also appreciate, you know, a very healthy approach to just the customer's need, right? There could be edge cases, use cases where it still makes sense to start one way, but to have a path towards something that's next gen, so to speak, and not be too idealistic about it and just be agnostic to the technology that you're using. You're looking at the customer's problem, and based on that problem, you're offering a solution. And sometimes it could be a technology in quotation mark from the past for a while until you transition to something new, which is healthier than always recommended the newest next big thing, so to speak.
Yeah. And of course, we are also relying on our partners. So we cooperate with AWS, with Amazon, okay. Mm-hmm. where we yep. can have the centers in different time zones and to have the security and availability. Yep. And really, I can, since we have all the applications there, so we have no real issues there. And the second thing is that we are learning more and more, and there are also mixed projects now. We have customers which are also in aerospace, and mm-hmm. also some of our automotive customers, they have defense, for example, applications, and so there are special security requirements. So sometimes we also implement in the customer cloud. So there is a mixture also. So, and we recognize today that we are also able to provide know-how to these customers, because today, after running our cloud operations for several years at Amazon, so we have so huge and deep experience with running all different technologies in cloud that we can even support our customers with this know-how.
Yeah. Any other technologies that we haven't talked about so far that you're excited about, that you consider cutting edge and promising for the years to come, something that you're experimenting with that you're really excited about?
Of course, everybody is speaking about ChatGPT and so on. honestly, I don't know what it will bring. We need to keep our eyes open on it. But I think generally it's, of course, artificial intelligence and machine learning, which will come definitely. As I told, we are not, as Aimtech, we are not early adopters. It's role of the big players like Accenture or IBM and others, which work together with OEMs like BMW or Daimler or Toyota. And these are companies which have totally different budgets and investments into this area, and they can really use these technologies. We are, I would say, proven technology partner for mid-sized customers. Yeah, so we bring the proven technologies, and we bring it. So today we are in the status that we run very interesting projects on the BI level to do the proper visualization and to provide a real decision-making base for the managers, because I think the people are still important. On the other hand, I believe it's a pass to the machine learning, because to be good at machine learning, you need to understand the data. You need to understand what you need from the data. And I believe that the good BI projects are the right way to understand the data and to build the resources, to build the internal competencies, and so on, to be able to define the task for the artificial intelligence, because this is the definition. And you know that these roles of the people who are, again, dolmetscher or translator from business to technology, these are the most important people today for IT.
Yeah, I mean, I find that refreshing too. You don't always have to be the cheerleader for the newest thing, right? You don't always have to be early adopter on anything. There also needs to be a partner, a trusted partner that accompanies you on the way of deciding which of the new technologies are ready to be implemented. You don't have to jump on the newest train on everything. So that's quite refreshing, which doesn't prevent you from talking about good things and technology that's coming down the pike. And one good way to talk about that is at the Tile conference. I mentioned it briefly at the outset of our conversation. I'm very much looking forward to joining the conference this year. I've heard a lot about it, but I've never attended. So maybe spend a couple of minutes to describe what am I looking forward to when I'm coming to Pilsen in May.
Yeah, we'll have 23rd year with this conference.
Wow.
And mm-hmm. so it's a really traditional event here in Czech Republic, but it's not only for Czech Republic, because we do it for 5 years now together with IHK Regensburg and okay. with mm-hmm. DTIHK, Deutsche Industrie Handelskammer, mm-hmm. together as a Czech Bavarian or Czech German event. So
nice.
Mm-hmm. So it's really international. It's run in English, German, Czech, of course. And mm-hmm. we'll have really good speakers there, excellent speakers. And this will be focused again we want to bring the highest value to the attendees and the great emotions. It's called trends, so it will bring the trends. As you are asking about what happens today, so people like Mr. Cameron or Klaus Straub, who is the ex-CIO of BMW.
Yeah,
so
known figures.
They'll speak about the trends today, how the IT and digitalization is supporting the changes on the market. Also, it will be about what are the really changes of the on the market today. But there will be also topics like sustainability, and we expect like more than 300 people there from Czech, Germany. We will have colleagues from Baden-Württemberg. There'll come mm-hmm. people from IHK Reutlingen. There'll come people from Bayern Innovative and a lot of others. So I am really looking forward to this event.
Awesome. Yeah, I've actually indeed have heard much about it. It popped up on my radar, but I just felt like a really late adopter when you said it's been the 23rd time or 23 times it's been on, and it's only my first time. So yeah, bad on me.
Maybe you can ask your friend and colleague Marco Priglmeier, who was one of the keynotes in last years, and he's returning to our event every year now. So he knows
That's
it
right.
very well, and to reintroduce new trends and to our customers and generally to automotive experts. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll leave a link in the show notes. If people are interested, they can sign up there, and hopefully we'll all meet in Pilsen in May. Roman, thank you very much for the interesting conversation today. I very much appreciated our conversation that's continued on in Pilsen. Thanks for being on the program.
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you, and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was the Logistics Drive podcast episode with Roman Zack from AIMTEC. If you're interested in joining the Trends in Automotive Logistics Conference in Pilsen in May, you will find a link to it in the show notes. If you attend the event, drop me a note so we can meet up there. Hope to see you there. That's it for today. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.